Welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. I'm John Cook, and I'm joined by George Goncalves, MUFG's head of U.S. macro strategy, and MUFG's chief Japan strategist, Takahiro Sugito. It's Monday, November 22nd, 2021. Welcome back to the podcast, George and Sugito-san.
Great to be on, as always, with you and my esteemed colleague from Japan.
Happy to be back with you and George.
Yeah, great to have you both. And I'd like to welcome our listeners to our second special cross-border episode. Why don't we start things off with you, George? Again, we're recording on Monday, November 22nd, and we got some major news out of DC with the renomination of Chair Powell, as well as Fed Governor Brainard's nomination as a vice chair. You know, again, I thought this was largely priced in and expected, but it created quite a stir today. So, maybe you could touch on that a little bit, George. But the real question I have for you is how this informs your views on rates and just what else did we learn from today's announcement?
Yeah, no, it's been an interesting day. I agree with you. I mean, considering how the markets moved. I'll take the second part of that question in terms of what we learned today at the announcement, and then I'll address kind of the market implications at the end. The one point I'd like to make, and it's more actually like a question, like why did it take so long if we ended up with Chair Powell again? And so, I mean, maybe we'll never know, but judging by the market's reaction, some were discounting the risk or the possibility, I should say, of Brainard becoming the chair. And the market has a view that the Fed Governor Brainard is more dovish than Chair Powell, and markets could have been set up for a more prolonged hiking cycle and more liquidity in the system remaining for much longer. And so I think that's probably one of the more key points to make. And then the second point is overall though, putting the market's reaction aside, this is generally a good thing, right? We've now had this uncertainty hanging over markets. It has passed. It's equally good that we have continuity with Chair Powell remaining. The question is, was Powell waiting for all this to kind of transpire and now he's going to turn more hawkish? I have more thoughts on that later. And I guess the last point on what we learned today is overall, and this was probably, at least in my opinion, will go down one of the more better decisions from President Biden, considering what's going on with inflation being in focus, allowing now the Fed to get on with tapering and tightening. And this could be a defining moment for DC on a number of fronts. And so I just want to make that point too. So I think hopefully clearing up some of this uncertainty will get things resolved and move forward. In terms of markets and my views, the thing is, as of today, we now have basically three hikes priced in already, and we're at some of the highest levels we've seen in short-term rates in a while. So although this obviously is slightly less dovish, it's not necessarily a hawkish change in leadership at the Fed. So I think the market's getting a little bit ahead of itself. Perhaps the Fed's happy to see the markets take out some of the froth that's in financial assets, but I think it's within limits. I mean, I don't think they want to see all assets go down like the way they did today towards the end of the close. And so I think that that's a key point to make around markets and how the Fed's going to read the market's reaction to this. We still have the December FOMC meeting. I can't see how the Fed will try to encourage even more rate hikes than what's priced in. So now it's more about this delicate balance of getting markets to realize that, yes, we're going to see tapering, maybe even a faster tapering, but hikes are going to be much more measured and at a gradual pace.
Thanks for that, George. So why don't we switch gears here and turn our focus to Japan. Sugito-san, as we heard from George just now, the U.S. is clearly heading down a road of less fiscal stimulus, although, as George said, we might be a little over our skis there, or the market might be rather. You know, less fiscal stimulus, less central bank, you know, intervention in markets. Whereas in Japan, your research has been covering, you know, as example, the new economic stimulus measures recently announced by the Kishida administration. Why don't you walk us through Kishida's fiscal stimulus and the implication for JPY rates and JPY basis?
The Kishida administration announced additional economic stimulus measures on November 19th. With overall project spending of 78 trillion yen, fiscal spending of 55 trillion yen, central government spending of 43 trillion yen, and a fiscal year 21 supplementary budget of 31 trillion yen, reserves of 5 trillion yen in a fiscal year 22 budget will cover part of the additional economic measures. The Ministry of Finance plans to release its JGB issuance plans, and while the details of the fiscal sources will have to be examined closely, the budget seems to show that there is little risk of an increase in a public offering of the JGBs being released on the market. However, the details will not be clear until the fiscal year 22 JGB issuance plans are known, and given the possibility of growing speculation of the yen rate creeping higher, we now feel that yen swap rates could take on an upward bias. We think that dollar yen basis could widen given the fundamental demand among Japanese for foreign assets with yen basis. We expect the yen basis to maintain a widening bias.
Okay, so higher yen rates and a wider basis, and there's definitely some similarities here. We've got a ton of fiscal stimulus in the U.S. We've got fiscal stimulus in Japan. So you know, now kind of moving on to what I would argue is a bit different. Let's see here. Let's keep with you, Sakito-san. One thing we haven't covered is the BOJ and recent developments. And this again is potentially where the differences are. You know, in terms of the Fed and the BOJ. Why don't you take us briefly through recent changes in deposit incentives for regional banks and how that may impact the yen market?
Okay. On November 16th, the Bank of Japan released an amendment to the special deposit facility to enhance the resilience of the regional financial system. The BOJ reduced the incentives after confirming the fact that yen deposit-led incentives were having on Japanese regional banking restructuring, limiting the effect on the front end of the yen yield curve, which tends not to decline. The front end has stayed high as a result of BOJ's yen interest rate incentives. This will put downward stress on the front end of the yen yield curve from fiscal year 22 onward. So we lowered our outlook for the front end of the yen yield curve slightly. And we expect the Bank of Japan to make a move with monetary policy by adjusting current deposit incentives in the fourth quarter 2022, before the end of Governor Haruhiko Kuroda's end of term, April 2023. With the US Fed expected to hike interest rates in the second half 2022, we think dollar yen basis will likely widen as the US-Japan yield gap widened in the second half 2022 because of the changes. Deposit incentives for the BOJ's program to bolster the regional banking sector, we maintain our view of widening for yen basis. And last week, JPY strengthened as oil prices started to decline and inflation expectations collect. And the dollar yen is now trading in a range around 114. Global bond investors appear to be showing growing preference for both treasuries and JGBs. A limited rise in US rates will also limit the rise for US dollar. The Fed leadership changes 50 yen higher today. We maintain a new low bias for the yen with a 2 yen range 113.75 to 115.75.
Thanks, Kido-san. So neutral on dollar yen here. George, why don't we conclude back over with you? One of the risks that you mentioned earlier in the podcast, and this is certainly starting to get some more focus by the Fed, is that the Fed may be forced to taper faster and potentially hike sooner as a result of elevated and persistent inflation. I mean, at this point, you know, this thing is clearly not transitory. You know, you've also talked about how current loose financial conditions might react, to such a scenario in your latest macro markets publication. Could you explain it for our audience? To be clear, what exactly you're looking at here, and how does that tie into what you just heard from Sakito-san about, as example, like an easing effort overseas?
Sure, absolutely. And I think it's also important to maybe take a step back and look at history as well, and then compare. And this is recent history, by the way. And compare what we're going through now and what lies ahead versus what, let's say, happened in taper 1.0. And I'll start there and then kind of tie it back to what we heard from Sakio-san and also the risks of the Fed having to tighten faster. So if you go back and you remember tapering 1.0 and you look at what happened in 2013, 2014, at that point in time, you know, the rest of the world was either easing, especially in Japan. Japan had launched their QQE a couple of years earlier. They were still doing a lot more easing. The Fed had stopped easing with tapering. They were getting the markets ready for hikes. It was much more longer runway than what they're going to be afforded this time. But nonetheless, the Fed was preparing markets for higher rates. And at the same time, Europe was still dealing with some of its existential issues around the Eurozone, and that led to the ECB launching their first QE2, right? So like the coming out of taper 1.0, we had the benefits of global liquidity taking the baton from the Fed. And that is also what I and many of others have attributed to, like the continued search for yield all throughout this period as investors looked overseas for other investments. So that was then. Now, however, things are slightly different because obviously coming out of the pandemic, and all of these one-off factors that have led to a pretty big rise in inflation, but it's not just endemic to the US, it's a global phenomenon. And so other central banks are gonna probably also have to tighten shortly thereafter or in tandem with the Fed. And so this is gonna make it different in the way that financial conditions, which are influenced largely by US, at least US financial conditions are largely influenced by the actions of the Fed. But during that period of 14 through 17, before the Fed started to do quantitative tightening, excess global liquidity was also helping US financial assets. So now we're heading into an environment where inflation is high everywhere. The Fed might be forced to taper faster because it's actually even higher here in the US. And you have hikes that won't take 18 months or 15 months to get launched. They're going to probably take 6 months to 9 months the latest, if that. And so you're creating an environment where financial conditions and just financial markets have not had to deal with this sort of urgency by central banks to tighten in many decades, really. And so with that being the backdrop, my concern and the risks are that financial conditions are probably the loosest they've been. They might get a little bit looser, but maybe not. And that really then calls into question how will markets respond, and with valuations being so high, it could be a situation where it's going to be much harder for financial markets to do well, even if the economy is doing well. It could be this final break that we have, which we haven't seen in quite some time. So that's the backdrop. I mean, I think Japan and what's going on there could still result in high demand for U.S. assets. It's still a higher yielding product, and I think that Japan will be one of the savings grace for the U.S. bond market, but it won't be enough.
Man, that's a heavy ending for this thing. There's just a ton of stuff to think about and talk about there. And perhaps we could pick it up on another episode. For our listeners, I would definitely encourage you to check out George's most recent Macro to Markets piece, as well as Sakita Sun's JPY Cross Asset publications. And if you aren't receiving them, let us know. George and Sakita Sun, thanks again for coming together to discuss these topics. I'm a big fan of this, and we should do it again. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having us, John.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for listening to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast. Rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And reach out to your MUFG sales rep for any further information. Check back soon for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.